Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome one and all to Knife Talk, the number one knife-related podcast. With myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, and Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. Now, unfortunately, Mareko isn't with us this week as he's travelling. He's off to get some sun, I believe. So it's just us two, I'm afraid. So no Damascus questions, okay? Just leave it. Leave it.
Hey, come on. Well, a little bit, I can spell it.
I don't know what it is. So how are things, Jeff?
Things are okay. Things are okay. I'm trying to keep myself busy because when this comes out, we'll be sending my daughter back to Los Angeles for school. Mm. On Saturday, and you know, as we know, it's a kind of a troubling time and place. So we're kind of like not fired up at it. We had a great break with her, nice. And I'm just trying to keep busy because we know after 5 weeks with her at home, you got to like change it up a little bit. I had her on full blast as my last episode, which was a lot of fun. And everything's good. We're hope by the time this comes out, hopefully the new website's up. I had a visit from my business partner Tony, who said that they're expecting it to come up on Friday. So hopefully the new website's up. And in the meantime, I've been focusing on getting inventory, so when the website is ready to go, we have stuff available. So it's just been like kind of catch up, and we're doing a lot of. We're still working on collaborations, and we're still doing some new stuff, but it's just been like, because January's on the quiet side, and with everything going on in the world, I don't think a lot of people are buying stuff, so it gives us the time to kind of like prepare for the new website. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
And how are you?
I'm okay. I'm back in France, where it is freezing. It's like -6 at the moment. Freezing. But I'm okay. We had some bad news last week, unfortunately, which means things are changing a bit around here. I've got to get off my lazy ass and do shit, basically. and that's all come sort of very quickly. So I've had a crazy few days. Which I'll talk about in the coming weeks, I'm sure. Very, very, very busy. It's my birthday on Sunday.
Get out. So
by the time you read this, I'll already be 22. By the time you hear this, 22. I'll already be 22. So we're skiing for the weekend, which will be nice, just Amy and me. So that'll be nice. And I can't complain. I'm super busy. There's stuff to look forward to. So yeah, it's all good.
Are you going to be making more knives?
I am, amongst other things, yes. Yeah.
You can't give us a little preview of what amongst other things is?
The amongst other things is, it's more music related, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We've signed people to a label. So basically running a label.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
It is exciting. So in the UK, we have this tradition of like, Christmas specials. I'm sure you do in the US as well. You know, TV shows having a Christmas special, on Christmas Day or whatever it may be.
Right.
And the UK's Christmas Day special this week is this sort of comedy drama, and anybody in the UK will know what I'm talking about. But there was a song being sung in it by a character, and we've signed that character to a record label, and we're releasing that song. And it was the most listened to thing on Christmas Day. You know, like 37 million people heard it on the day. You know,
wow.
So it's quite a big deal, and this artist, there's a lot more to him than just what people heard on the TV. So, yeah. So it's been really busy getting that sort of over the line and working with that. So, yeah, it's good.
Wow.
All good.
That's amazing.
It is, yeah. And again, it's just it took a left corner last week, and all of a sudden I'm 8 streets away, you know? It's mad. Right. It's mad. But, it's fun. Well, it's fun.
Look, things could be a lot worse. Things could be a lot worse.
Exactly. Yes, we're very much aware of that. Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Shall we talk knives?
If you want, we could talk whatever you want.
We don't have to. I mean...
it was heavy knife talk, yes, last week.
It was.
It was it heavy.
It was heavy. I heard it. Some great questions as well. No, it was great. It was good. It was good.
You know, we missed we missed Mareko. Hopefully we'll see him next week.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure we will. So. Sure we will. Right then, shall we get going?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Welcome and intros. That's done. Okay. Remember this. Hey, man, can I ask you a question? It's been a while, hasn't it, since we played that. So, hey, man, can I ask you a question? It's where you send us questions in and we try our best to answer. And if Mareko can't, well, we save it for next week then, I suppose. So if you've got a question for us, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. DM us your questions and... yeah, and we'll get to them. Not on TikTok. We're not on TikTok. We need to talk about that as well. What's going on? TikTok.
We have had a lot. Actually, social media has come up because a lot of people have been sending it. All knife makers have been excited about how Mark Zuckerberg is kind of like stopped with the regulatory stuff. So that came up. That came up a lot in the DMs.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to that at some point, I'm sure. First question is from Dan McGrath. He says, question, if you could learn one thing from anyone, past or present, what and who would you choose? He says, a side note, one of the most heroic and hardest things we can do as men is to ask for help. Hopefully everyone is having a great week. Love the show.
There you go. Look at that.
There we go. Straight in with it. Okay, yeah. If you could learn one thing from anyone, past or present...
I would have a knife thing, and then I would probably, when I first read this, I immediately thought of my hero, my sculpture hero of Alexander Calder, who is, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest American sculptor who pioneered sculpture in the United States. He was the guy who created the concept of the mobile. He was like, when you see like mobiles and all that stuff, it's from him, and he was such a huge inspiration for me. I think I would want to learn, and I know this is knife talk, this isn't sculpture talk, but I think that I would want to learn how to execute creativity better. Because, like, he was the kind of guy, he's an incredible sculptor, but he just couldn't stop, to the point where he always had a spool of wire in his pocket and a tweezer, needle-nose pliers, and he would be making anything wherever he was. So he was making earrings or little sculptures or little maquettes or little... He was always he
needle
never,
nose pliers in his pocket.
He's old, yeah.
That's an actor thing. Actors do that, don't they? They need to cry. They pull out a pube.
Oh, is that?
They do. That's an acting trick.
Wait a second. Reload. You're saying that they cut a hole in their pant pocket and they pull out a pube to cry.
Pull out a pube and it brings tears to their eyes. Honestly, that's the thing. I've heard that. Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Do you think they need special equipment? They need fucking pliers to pull out a pube.
Needle nose pliers. Normally Damascus, I'd find they were made of Damascus.
Maybe that's why he was so emotional. He wasn't working on wires, he was just plucking pubes out.
Dharma steel pliers. Yeah.
I think that for me as a knife maker, the most important thing is, you know, talent is important, but like being able to execute and be persistent is far more important. And the fact that he would have just an extraordinary, he was totally obsessed with work. And that's what I would want to, not making sculpture like him or making knives like someone, but it's the ethics. It's the figuring out ways in which to be more productive. And I think that would be my one. And you go for another one, and then I'm going to think about a knife guy. Who would you like?
Okay. I'll give you a knife one and a non-knife one. Okay. So my knife one, if I could go back and learn from somebody, and what would it be? It would be when I first started making knives. I'd wish that I'd spoken to you beforehand, Jeff.
Me?
Yes, I wish I had this resource. Like you talking about the way you run your business and that kind of thing. Because I started making knives, and it was probably about maybe 7 or 8 months later until... you sort of come on the podcast. I started the podcast almost immediately as a way to sort of learn off people. about 7 or 8 months later, I think you became part of the podcast, you know, on a regular basis. And I think I wish I'd known the stuff that you've dropped since then when I started. Things went pretty quick for me. From when I started, I got overwhelmed very, very quickly with both orders and just work in general. And I think if I had your advice at the point, I think things maybe would have been a lot smoother.
Huh.
So that's my sort of knife related thing.
Non-knife
related. Okay. Back to sort of ethics and just being a great person. I think we've all. It's not you this time, Jeff.
I can't you be twice for Christ's sakes.
No, I think. I don't know why, but over Christmas, I think a lot of us maybe think about people who we sort of miss, you know, family members, all that kind of people we've maybe lost in the past. And my grandfather, right, he was such a special person, right? He always made me feel like as if I was his favorite, right? Always. And I always thought that growing up, right up until I was, you know, a man. Always thought I was his favorite. And it wasn't until we get, like, his funeral, when everybody's chatting, everybody thought the same.
Wow. You know?
He made everybody feel like they were his favorite. Huh. So I think, yeah, to take that skill and, yeah, to make everybody feel loved the way he did would be pretty cool as well.
Now would be the time for you to pluck out a pube with your needle pliers. So you can really fucking drive it home, you know?
I've got none left after this week, let me tell you. I'm like an otter's belly down there.
Can't get much better than that. All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Jesus Christ.
Come on, seriously. You need to think of a person.
For a knife person, a knife person, I think I think about, like, I mean, when I think about the, in terms of like knife guys, it's not just one person. Nick Anger is like, he's like my, usually refer to Nick Anger, Nick Anger, however you want to call him. The only reason why I say Nick Anger is because I called him and I got his answering machine once. And then he said Nick Anger. So that's it. I mean, he writing it on the, I think it would be Nick. Oh, we had a couple. It'd be Nick. It would be Ben Camone and Josh Prince. One of those three guys, because they figured out ways in which to execute creativity and find their own way. And they're all very hardworking guys. So I think I would go with that. But you don't get a laundry list. I mean, you get a laundry list of these guys. I mean, there's just a ton of them. You know, the hard part is what you were saying in regards to learning what you learn. And I think the next question, or one of the next questions, kind of talks about that.
Okay.
Let's keep going. Let's keep going, and we'll hit the. Yeah, the next question will lead into their next topic of conversation.
Okay.
Double Dog Forge. He says, "Hey guys, I have a question for you. Do you have any tips for transitioning from a fun side hobby to a fun business? I'm coming up on 3 years of bladesmithing, and I want to start taking business side a little bit more seriously. I plan on keeping track of everything on a spreadsheet and probably getting a credit card specifically for the business. Anything specific that comes to mind? Thanks." This is a perfect segue into the last question, because
it is. And I'm going to take a few lines. Well, that first line. Do you have any tips from the transition from a fun side hobby to a fun business? I'm starting to think there's no such thing as a fun business. Or certainly the business side of work isn't fun.
Right.
And maybe shouldn't be fun. I don't know. But yeah, there's a huge difference in enjoying something to that thing that you enjoy then becoming your daily grind.
Right.
As in, that's what pays the bills. That's what keeps, you know, people away from the door, all that kind of thing. So I think if it already is a business, you know, you obviously try to keep it fun. You want to enjoy yourself. You don't, you know, go to work and hate it. But I think it's a very sort of fine line between
love and hate,
a successful business and a fun business. They're not necessarily, there's a blurry line there, you know?
This has become the topic of conversation that we've had on this podcast for years.
Yeah.
And I do blame us a little bit for it. Like, I know that, and then every time I say this, I said, you know, I know there's some people who fucking curse us because they quit their jobs and became knife makers. And, and then we'll get messages saying, yeah. And then they raise their hands and say, yeah, that was me. I think that for me, and back to what you were saying in regards to you know, listening to me and stuff, it took a long time. I'm a fucking 51. It took, and I've been an independent contractor or a independent sculptor for years. There was only like the times I had where I wasn't working for myself. You're talking like maybe a 10-year stretch, maybe, and that was about it. But I was a working sculptor and hustler and trying to figure out ways in which to kind of be independent for a long time. And I learned my lesson back then in regards to being taken seriously. And also, the fact is like when I got out of college and I wanted to be an art major, I was an art major. And I was telling my dad I was an art major. He looked at me like such a disappointment because he's like, how are you going to make money doing that? And then Hillary's, my wife's family, a relative, an older relative who's dead now, said, oh, big skull, big artist. What the fuck? You know, and it was very, very, very dismissive. And I felt the need to be as, you know, take it as seriously as possible to the point where I was taken seriously. So I kind of belittled a little bit of the sculpture time only because I was just like, we have to, you know, come up with the idea, stick to the plan, get it done. Everything isn't just like, you know, coffee with your finger out and, you know, you're being waxing poetic and listening to fucking Pink Floyd or something like that. Like, I felt as though it was really like, it was, if I wanted to be treated like a serious person, I got to take it seriously. And that was something that took me a long time to learn. And the fact is talent isn't enough. It's persistence. Yeah. It's persistence through the good times and the bad times. And it's like also persistence in the sense of you have to understand that you're going to make bad decisions and you have to learn from those bad decisions. And ultimately it's good. So it's hard. It's fucking hard. And I think that what Double Dog is doing is, you know, asking questions is good, but I talk to so many knife makers who make terrible business decisions. Like buying a thing, like, you know, a tool is not necessarily going to propel you into success. And I think that listening to other business people and learning about business will make you more successful if you've gotten all the knife stuff down.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one thing to mention is that, you know, yeah, you can enjoy making knives, but there's so much other things you need to think about.
Right.
From accounting to, you know, keeping track of inventory, you know, postage. You need to be everything unless you can afford to employ people to do these various things, which, you know, most of us can't. So when he mentions anything specific that comes to mind, it's a weird one. I'd say, but don't be cheap. And with that, I mean things like get like a website that'll handle inventory and all these things. They don't cost much, but you know, but it'll just save you. It depends how it can do. It certainly can do. And I think I've hit a nerve with Jeff there. It doesn't need to cost much, but that can save you such a headache, because then all of a sudden you've got a list of all your clients, you've got a list of their addresses for poses, you've got all these things. Don't do things on scraps of paper. Just right. Spend that little bit just to, you know, just to make your life easier.
And invest in growth of the business, you know, and part of that, there's a lot there. There's investing in the fact that your education is the business. Invest in things that will propel you. Don't consistently just, you know, do this. Constantly focus on what can do better. I had my business partner Tony was down today, and we were talking about the new website, and we were talking about all the things we needed to do, and the real reason why we got a new website. There was nothing wrong with our old website, except for the fact that when we've recently, over the past year, we've hired a public relations firm that's been good. I like the person we're dealing with. The price is right, and I don't expect a return on investment all the time. So it's like it's good. They had let us know that they had pitched us to some TV people, and one of the things that was told to the PR person is that our website was just not professional enough. And that was like the that was like a real big wake up call for Tony and Allison to approach me and say, we need a new website. And I said, okay, if this is what we need to invest in, this is what we need to invest in. And part of that is the idea of, like, you know, obviously you think about your time and you think about your energy and you also think about, you know, everything else. And, well, that anvil there. Well, if I got a, if only I got.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At this power hammer, my business would be... Some of this stuff doesn't fucking matter. And it's like, if you want to be successful, you have to look at it from a macro level and a micro level. And I also, one thing I will say is, and this is something that knife makers are really, really need help with, is customer service. We're in an age now where customer service, it has fallen to the wayside with restaurants and with everything else. You can't get someone on the phone to get a problem. No one's returning your emails. You've got to figure out ways in which to cultivate your customers into being from customers to clients, from people who are going to be, they're going to, on the tip of their tongue, if they need to get something special, they're going to call you. Part of it is shipping fast. Part of it is giving, you know, good customer service, answering questions quickly. I have this story that I've said before. I'll say it again. I had a friend who, well, a customer of mine who now, he has spent a lot of money with us, and a lot of it is because he found this knife maker. He really wanted to get this knife. He sent the guy an email. The guy didn't respond to the email. He bought a knife that was existing on the website. Something was wrong with it. He sent a message about something could be repaired. Never got a response. It left a terrible taste in his mouth. And then he contacted me, and I gave him white glove service, not knowing that, you know, regardless of what was going to happen. Yeah. And he's been a great customer for a long period of time, and it makes the biggest difference in the world. And this is one of the things that a lot of knife makers say, that they're always kind of have this adversarial relationship with their customers, and that is a giant mistake. And you're really, really not doing the best you can to make your business successful. Because your customers, not only maybe they want more than one knife, but maybe they need it for gifts. Maybe they need to tell you. Maybe somebody says, where'd you get that knife? You don't want to be on the bad side of your customers. And I think that the more you do to do good customer service, the more you're going to have a long bit of success. Mm. It's huge. I mean, we're shocked. We're shocked at how huge customer service has been for us. You know, 90% of our customers are return customers.
Wow.
Oh, wowzers. Dude, our customers are crazy. I had and this is not a humble brag, but I had a big Black Friday sale, really to try to help, you know, pump everything up, and it was great. Of all the packages, one thing got lost, and the woman said, it got lost. I looked at the tracking, it was stuck somewhere, probably behind a machine in some USPS hub. So she wanted to know what we could do about it. And I went to the post office, they can't do anything about it. I don't know what's going on now that you can't do anything about it. You used to be able to, you know, somebody could call somebody from somewhere and something happened.
Yeah.
So I said to her, listen, you know, I said, you know what? She was, this is for a present for my son. Blah, blah, blah. I said, I'll make you another knife. I'll send it out. And she was shocked. And I was just like, I'm sorry that this is happening to you. If it arrives, send the first one back. But I want to make sure you're taken care of. And this isn't your fault. And I didn't say this isn't my fault either. But it was like she was stunned that I was, I'd call her, number one. Number two is I took care of it very quickly. And I tried to be as helpful to her as possible. And now she's like fucking, as my wife said, she's creaming her jeans. that's my wife says, is she a boomer? I'm like, yeah. I said, I bet she was creaming her jeans. I'm like, you're goddamn right. Never forget plucking pubes from your pocket. No problem. So customer service is very, very underrated in the knife making game. I would highly suggest considering it.
Double Dog Forge. You had an answer there, didn't you?
I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Well, this next question is sponsored by Broadbeck Ironworks. Would you like to tell the world all about your Broadbeck?
Oh, dude, it's just not even, it's not even close. It's a great company. They make great grinders and attachments for your grinders that makes that one grinder of yours very, very user-friendly. It goes horizontal. It goes vertical. And what'll happen is you'll find yourself being more efficient because you'll have more products available. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off all their attachments, all their kits, all their different ways in which to, you know, all the different things. And then you can also check out their new power hammer that's really, really cool. And I am all in on Broadbeck Ironworks.
All in. Okay, well, with that in mind, where are we? Scott Porter. Says, what, if any, grinder maintenance do you guys do? I just want to stay on top of it and make sure my grinder stays up and running for as long as possible. Cheers, fellas. Hope the holidays are good for you and your families. Scott Porter on Instagram. Thank you for the question. Right, okay. Maintenance on a grinder. What have you got, Jeff?
Well, it's weird. It's funny because I used to have grinder. Oh, I still have the grinders, but I don't use them as much. Before I had the Broadbecks, I had a couple grinders. And I found myself destroying the motors. And one of the reasons why one of the motors was destroyed was because I had put a glass platen on the, or a Pyrex platen on the platen, you know, attached it. So to try not to make sure there was so much heat. And it was pushed out for a while. And what would happen was I'd put so much pressure on that I would start to ruin the motor.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I started to ruin the motor, and this was years ago. And then the other thing is I was also destroying the bearings on the wheels. So I got extra ball bearings for the wheels, and I change them out when they're starting to get a little sloppy. I will say that I'm amazed at how much more less maintenance I'm doing on the Broadbeck. I've had to replace on the Broadbeck. I think I had to replace one of the cams, like the, what is it? A cam is the cam, right? It's the thing that when you put to release the tension. I think had to replace
the handley kind of thing.
The shock or the, I think it's called a cam, but that I had to replace that once, but I haven't had much problems. I think that getting ball bearings that you can replace is pretty good. That would be pretty important. What about you? What do you think?
I think with any sort of machinery, really, just making sure that it's kept clean and dry. A lot of us are sort of dunking in and out, and you know, you can get, you know, wet dust everywhere. So yeah, try and keep things clean and tidy. One tip that I have actually with a grinder, where you get all this sort of grind dust everywhere. It can be a pain. If you try to like sweep it up, it just gets up in the air and it gets everywhere. Get yourself a really heavy, strong magnet, some really thin G10, which you put over the magnet. And then you can use that then to pick up all your shavings and so on. And all you need to do then is just peel off that G10 from the magnet.
Whoa.
Because there's nothing worse than having a magnet that's full of metal, of dust, and you're trying to get it off, and it won't because it's obviously magnetized.
Talking about plugging pubes out of here with a
exactly. It's pretty much that. So yeah. So if you just get a 2 mil G10 or something like that, and you put that over the magnet, then do it that way. You can just peel off that G10, put everything in the bin, and you can reuse the G10 and so on. But yeah, just keeping things tidy and like dust free. Because, I mean, those motors, they have these fins on the side, you know, obviously to cool them down. But I think, you know, if you're keeping things, you know, really, really dirty, it's not going to be good for anything. I mean, nothing really needs... I mean, I often put, especially if I'm not using my grinder for a while, which I often don't, because the way I generally grind is I'll grind loads at once and I won't grind again for a long time. Then I'll grind loads at once. You know, I generally do things in batches, stages like that. So, yeah, maybe just put some wax on certain things, that you know, or some, you know, even some WD-40 on some things, just so they don't rust, because, you know, if you are dunking in and out of water as well and you just leave things, there are some areas of grinders that will rust. Just general maintenance, really, and the same with drill presses and all the rest of it. It's pretty much the same.
One thing about platens that needs to be adjusted is the fact that wherever your work rest is, if you're using your work rest for profiling, if you're profiling steel, you're going to be hitting one spot on the platen, and what'll happen is your platens can dish. And when you're at one spot on the platen, you're going to notice some dishing. So sometimes I'll put the Broadbeck Cells replacement platens or like cut platen covers, or you could. But what you also can do is you can actually kind of flatten them, flattening your platen every so often. Or some people put a piece of you can get pieces of Pyrex, which is like that high heat glass, and then you can put like a ledge on your platen with like a couple screws, and then use I think it's JB Weld, and then you can JB Weld your Pyrex platen, and that's pretty good because it doesn't wear away like the steel does. But just be conscious of the fact that if you're using your platen on a work rest, you're basically putting pressure on one spot on your platen, and then when you go to freehand grind or something like that, you're going to notice it's not going to be as effective, and you will get some wobble on the way you're grinding, and you're going to wonder, well, what's going on or what's happening. The thinner your belt, the easier it is going to transfer whatever's behind your platen to your knife. So like on a 36 grip belt, you won't notice it, but when you get down to something on the thin side, you'll notice that whatever kind of weirdness is behind on your platen, it's going to almost transfer through into the blade. So fixing your platen is a giant change. And not only that, but using whatever you're using as a push stick, you need to make sure that's flat too, because if it's weird, you're not going to get what you're expecting from it. So that the platen is the one thing that's going to be something you should keep your eyeball on.
Yeah, unless you've got one of those work rests that you can bring up and down, so you're not always hitting the same spot.
Right.
But just watch it.
Sometimes, like what we'll do is when we finish profiling something, we'll take the work rests off and we'll go up and down because I like the profile of the blade edge. I don't want any flat spots. Like, and I'm also looking to kind of like clean off any stuff. And I notice when we take the belts off, you'll have those lines going up and down, you know, going up and down the thing. Yeah. I'll notice those lines transfer into the platen. So the more shits on your platen, the less likely you're going to have a very nice experience. And the more fucked up it is, the more fucked up you're going to have to clean it. So it's.
Did you just hear that then?
What?
Did you hear that? That's Brian inventing a like a dressing stone for a platen.
Dude, when is he going to go on Shark Tank?
I mean,
seriously, when is he going to go on Shark Tank? All right, sharks. I saw that first. Here's we got
all
the
American made.
I mean, he's making everything. He's making everything.
Good on him. Where are we? Buster Cooey. Well,
before I go on, you know what he hasn't made, though?
What hasn't he made?
Even Heat Kiln. You know?
Oh, man. He'll tell you all about it. Hey.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
If I have the best new slug line for Evenheat, and I just I haven't had the balls to say it to, I'll say it to him when I see him, but it's going to be, if you got to get it hard, use an Evenheat. But I don't know. I say that all the time, and I'm just like, that's weird. My daughter was on the podcast. I forgot she was on the podcast. I was doing all the ad reads. I was like, you got to get it hard. You just need it. And she goes, hey, yo, dad, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, even heats. I mean, we all use them. There's a reason why we use them, because they're the best. They're the best. Buster Cooey, again, on Instagram, he's DM'd us. Just some thoughts. We're wondering if the proposed tariffs will hurt knife makers ship in both ways, especially poor Lawrence at Maritime. Maybe you can have a second location south of the border, he's saying. So these proposed tariffs, this is this whole Canada becoming one. Is that what this is about?
It's not. No one's, trust me. Who's going to get the better health care? This is the wall. All of a sudden, it's like, it's not going to happen. What are they going to get, our shitty health care, or we're going to get their free shitty health care? No one's buying nobody. That's just cut it out. Let's forget it.
But so what's the tariffs thing? I
don't know enough about it. I'm not an economist. I'm under the impression that there are threats of tariffs and who knows who that affects. I'm just under the impression that it's not companies that will absorb this, but the end user will be the ones who absorb this. But like I said, I'm not a economist. I don't know how any kind of tariffs would affect anybody. But you know, look, life's tough, and everything always rolls down to the consumer. So yeah, I don't know. I can't see how. I mean, it's all speculation now and political talk, so I don't know. Hopefully nothing, but hopefully it just always feels like anytime someone gets screwed, it's always the fucking citizens. So
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, hate to say it. I mean, you want to talk about, I don't want to talk about getting screwed, but I mean, what's going on in California is like unbelievable. And yeah, frankly, without just, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, this is on the bottom of the top of my list. I mean, my daughter's school is in Los Angeles, and it was evacuated during the fires. Thank God we were home. She was home with us. We were close enough, and I mentioned this on last week. Our friend Fell Knives, Nick, his whole house burned down in Altadena. So there are a lot of people who are affected by it, and you know, it's very concerning, and hopefully not only the problems in California, but I mean, you know, those terrible floods in the Carolinas, and I have friends who lost their homes in Asheville, and you know, let's just hope that, you know, something happens where, you know, this government can be, you know, good for everybody. But now we're, you know, once again, it's the end user, and the end user gets boned, and let's hope that the end user doesn't get boned.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a title for us. Okay.
Well, we're going to go with the needle nose pliers in your pocket. I mean, I thought that was.
Yeah, I think we should. Let me make a note. Do you want to read out the next ones? Hubris Workshop, yeah. And I'll make a note.
Listen, guys, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and then you can follow us there, and you can send us your messages, send us your listener feedback. We have listener feedback to get to too, and we also have birthday shout outs. Birthday shout outs is going to be our new bit. I can't wait. But this one comes from Hubris Workshop. Hubris Workshop says, hello, boys. Question, I'm using my Even Heat 110, and it has long ramp times. I'm forging 1045, then following... 1095, then following the normalization grain resurfacing. The normalization that the New Jersey Steel Baron suggests with the Even Heat. I heat it to 1650, hold it for 15 minutes. Then again at 1500, then at 1300, austenize at 1480, a 15-minute soak time, quench and parks 50. All right, my question is at what point during the ramp-up should I be putting the steel in the kiln? With long ramp times, I don't want to put it in too early, but if I wait, the kiln is almost at temperature, and I'll lose a couple hundred degrees opening the door. When I put the knife in and it's time to forge, is increased anyway. Also, I'm getting a fair amount of scale on each cycle. Should I be worried about the carbon loss? Is it worth painting on some anti-scale, or is carbon loss negligible? Thanks for sharing your thoughts and experience. Cheers. All right. So you got a kiln, and you have specific temperatures, and you're very worried that, you know, it takes a long time. A 110 machine is going to take a lot longer than a 220 machine. Yeah. You're worried about like the ramp time and rate time. What do you think about all that?
Just to point out one thing he was saying, actually, about the loss when he's opening the door, the loss of heat every time he opens the door. There's a very slight loss, but not as much as you think that is shown on your readouts. So basically, you have this thermocouple, which is generally at the top or at the back, or you're normally at the top of an even heat. When you open the door, it's that thermocouple that's reading the temperature.
Right.
So when you open the door, cold air will just be sucked in quickly because there's hot air inside and cold air will be sucked into hot air. So that will affect the thermocouple really, really quickly. But the second you close the door again, the temperatures that we're talking within seconds, you're really back up to that temperature, unless you've left the door open for ages. If you open the door for a second or so, you'll be back up to temperature within seconds again. It may take a little bit longer for the thermocouple to register that, but you think you've got all these heat bricks inside. They've soaked up all that heat. So the minute you close the door again, they can relax again. And that all that heat comes back out, as well as obviously your elements coming back on and all the rest of it. So, yeah, don't worry too much about dropping temperature when you're opening the door just for a second or so.
I agree.
Thank you.
I agree. I agree with you. The other thing is sometimes when I program in my settings, I'll throw in extra time. Like if I'll do, like, when I do, when I set for like any type of quenching, when I finally hit the final temperature, it'll say, like, you know, I'll say, you know, hold it 1475 for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
After that 10 minutes, I'll do another ramp time. I'll do another 15 minutes just in case, because I don't want if I have four knives in the kiln and I open the button goes off, everything starts to kind of flow. I want it to keep going. So that's been really helpful to me in regards to making sure that I don't lose. In regards to the normalizing, I wouldn't worry so much about it. I mean, obviously, you know, it's going to take a long time to do it. Sometimes I'll put things in cold, or sometimes I won't. Sometimes I'll put it in when it gets close, and that kind of the soaking time, kind of, I feel like the soaking time helps contribute to that whole making sure everything's, you know, in there for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't get too horned up about like, should I put it in cold? Should I put it in hot? I mean, if the ramp time's long enough, the ramp time is what that's doing is it's making sure that it equalizes with the temperature of the oven. So
I think I asked this question when we had Dr. Laren Thomas on probably a few years back now. I think I asked this specific question, whether you put a blade in cold in a cold oven and let things ramp up together. And I think the conclusion was it doesn't make that much of a difference. It's the length of the soak, really. You just want to make sure that you everything is at that correct temperature.
I know for a fact that I have turned on the oven and then forged and then immediately timed it so the oven is – the kiln is ready to normalize and – I'll do it in a holding pattern almost. That's another thing you can do. Hubris? What you could do is like if you know that you're going to be normalizing at a certain point in time, you could do a program to get you to 1900 degrees and hold it there. So then you press the abort button and then you do whatever you need to do. You know, get your, you know, if you, you know, you get, let's, all right, I'll try to make that more interesting to say. So let's just say you know you're going to normalize in the afternoon and you know it's going to take 2 hours to get you to where you need to be. You want to be at 1600 degrees, make a recipe for 1600 degrees for like, you know, hold it for like an hour and then just press it, you know, a couple hours before you're going to do it. And then you're already there at the temperature. That's what we have to do at the Center for Metal Arts when I do the friction folder class, because my fear is we have such a limited amount of time to get them done and out. So what I'll do is I'll tell Pat to just turn the even heat on to 1475. And he says, how long you want it to go for? I said, do it for 3 hours. So then I know when I hear the beep that it's going to stay there at 3 hours. We'll put all the knives in and then we'll take a stopwatch and do 15 minutes and then we'll start quenching. But it's always going to be there and we're not waiting for it to start. You know, get yourself work ahead. Work ahead or get your oven hot enough ahead of time and just fucking hold it there. Because, I mean, you're not really, I mean, you know, you're not talking dollar, you know, you're not saving. If you're making knives and you're trying to save 50 cents, it's just like your time is far more valuable than that.
Yeah, agreed. So there's going to be lots of people who may be listening, maybe who just maybe come to the show, or, you know, they haven't been listening that long, or haven't been making that
long. Love it.
And you may be wondering, what the hell are you talking about? Ramp temperatures and all the rest of it. They're obviously talking about their kilns, their even heat kilns. If you haven't got one yet, you know where you can get one.
Where?
MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
Damn.
Yeah, so we just talked about, you know, he's a Canadian distributor for combat abrasives. They sell Rhino-et, Rhino-Stick.
Ooh.
Basically, anything we mention on the show, Lawrence will have at Maritime Knife Supply. Steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forged kilns, the lot. You can get 10% off belts as well, abrasive belts, if you buy 10 or more. And he's just a really good dude, too. So head on over to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com and also give him a follow on Instagram, Maritime Knife Supply, because he's always got new, interesting things.
Always.
Always. So, yeah, make sure you follow on Instagram.
And top tip, get yourself some of them Norton Razor Stars. Those things are sick. My favorite belt of all time. Talked about
really?
It last year. Oh, dude, yep. There's nothing close. I mean, the Norton Blazes and then the Razor Stars. Oh, my God. 36 Razor Star? I'm in. I love them. We also have another question. We also have nice feedback too. So whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, we need to do the next one because he's a gold star listener.
Right.
Mr. Brigham Kindell.
GSL.
He says he's truly honored to be a gold star listener, like Paul Janzen. Is it okay to give your seconds that you wouldn't want to sell to a customer to your family members? He says, my wife has 10 kids in their family, Jesus. And they all want a knife.
Jesus.
I have a few knives lying around in, I thought that said in work. Could you can imagine? in his cubicle, yeah. He opens up the stationery drawer and it's all his seconds.
Yeah.
I have a few knives lying around that work, not in work. Just have things I don't want to pass on to a paying customer.
Yes, the answer is yes.
I completely think so. As long as you tell everybody, you know, you're only getting this because it's a second.
You're garbage human being. I mean, you know, yeah. You say, yeah, I'm giving you my garbage because that's how I feel about you.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you must have been taking a particularly hard call at work when he was making that knife. yeah. For those who don't know, Brigham makes knives whilst he's doing another job. He's worked the game out. If you've got any seconds, I think... Giving them to sort of trusted family and friends works well because they'll give you feedback as well, you know? And I think, yeah, that's good.
What's that expression?
I'm sure.
Why buy the milk when you have the cow for free? That's
yes.
Him. I mean, he's doing it all. You got the cow, you got everything.
Oh, can you imagine? Oh. Okay, where are we going
Well,
next?
Wait a second. But the here's the thing. It's like there's no right. These whole questions, and Brigham is the man, GSL, I salute you. The whole idea of is it okay, or is it okay to do this? Is it okay to do that? You can do whatever the fuck you want. We're not members of some guild, you know, and where there's certain rules and regulations. Don't listen to other knife makers in regards to what you should and shouldn't do. I had a friend of mine, a good friend of mine is going through it, and I was, you know, he's been a friend for a long time, and I just thought I'd cheer him up. So I had an old knife that I just don't use anymore, and I just cleaned it up, and I sent it to him, and I just wrote to him saying, you know, you're a great cook. Here's something for your kitchen, and, you know, use it in good health. And it's not a new knife. It was like a 10-year-old knife, but, like, there's nothing wrong with it. And he was psyched. He was super pumped. He was just, like, thrilled. So, yeah, go ahead. I mean, you know, you don't – no one's using one of those little magnifying glasses on their eyeballs and just being like, you know, it's called, you know, what do you don't look at a gift horse in the mouth, right? I mean,
yeah,
who
yeah.
cares? I mean, your wife's got all these kids in their family. Go ahead.
He's busy in work, isn't he? She's popping all the kids
well,
out.
I don't
he's
think
busy
it's his
work.
10 kids. It's not their 10. I mean, just because
it's not their. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, it's not
okay.
their 10 kids. Just because
I was going to say, my wife has 10 kids. So like that.
Why?
They're yours too. Bingo.
It's just definitely. That's why he's a gold star listener, man. He's just sitting around and, you know, doing his thing. Oh, gosh. This is the time to pull out the fucking pliers.
What else have we got then? Let's leave questions for a bit.
All right, we have listener feedback. We got a lot of great listener feedback, and if you want to submit your listener feedback or your birthday wishes, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. We're going to start doing birthday wishes. And what I'll do is at the end of the month, I will read out birthday wishes. So if you have a birthday wish, it could be whatever you want, send it to Knife Talk Podcast and we'll read off all the birthday wishes. This one comes from the wife of one of our listeners. This is how much your wife loves you. She reached out to your bullshit podcast that you listen to that you don't shut up about, most likely. And then she fucking reached out. This one goes...
Joe Rogan isn't doing this, is he? No. He's not doing birthdays for his listeners.
This is more like radio. This is like radio. I'm ready to do traffic and weather, frankly. I mean, I'm happy to do that. This one goes out to Baltic Blades. Baltic Blades. His wife, Monica, says, "Hi, I know it's a long shot, but I would like to ask you for this one thing. January 12th is my husband's birthday, and I would love to surprise him. His name is Andreas, and he's a knife blade maker from Lithuania under the name Baltic Blades. As he is your fan, he's a fan of yours, my guess he's the only one of two people from Lithuania who are listening to the podcast. He really would be surprised to get a birthday greetings from you. Would it be possible to do that either? As a loving wife, I would really appreciate that. Monica, your wish is our command. Baltic Blades, happy birthday." And I agreed to do this on one condition. You got to take your wife out to dinner, get her something nice. Get off your ass. This was a nice thing. She reached out to a podcast that I'm sure you don't shut up about. I mean, it's just like, do you know about the plunge lines these guys are doing? But that was a really nice thing to do. So happy birthday to Baltic Blades. Andreas, you're the man. We are with you, my guy. And Monica, you're the wife of the century. My wife wouldn't fucking.
Monica.
My wife would call up a podcast, say, "Can you wish me happy birthday?" She's like, "Shut the shit. Oh, you'll be all right, Jeff. Don't worry about that." Good old Monica. The next one comes from Fox River Blades says, "This is Jaden from Fox River Blades reporting some knife news. I just want to send you this video that Mark Zuckerberg came out with." This was from a couple weeks ago, explaining changes coming to Facebook and Instagram and how they're going to deal with their guidelines, which I can only see as a positive for many of our business models. This was mostly about politics, and there was a tidbit about what I think pertains to us." Do you know what he's talking about?
No, not a clue.
So
no.
Mark Zuckerberg...
He seems to be everywhere at the moment, too.
He's really kind of changed his stance on things. So basically, you know, knife makers, we've been talking about this till they're blue in the face. There's a lot of censorship. Some people are calling it censorship. Some people are calling it shadow banning. Some people are calling it suppression. But there has been a degree of censorship, and Mark Zuckerberg of Meta has said that we've been, you know, trying to, you know, they admitted that they've been suppressing some people. So they're going to do less of that, the Meta doing the suppressing, and they're going to leave it to, you know, people to report, you know, stuff that really needs to be reported. So hopefully this becomes something that this is a good thing for knife makers, hopefully. But however, I will go back to what I said before of saying that the best thing to do would be focusing on your current customers instead of looking for new ones all the time. And I think that you're going to find that you're going to get better results as a fact. I have had better growth in the last 6 months, and I have the two marks saying that they can't promote me from Meta. And a lot of it's because of the collaborations I've been doing. And my viewing numbers are higher than they ever have been. So I think that there are ways in which you can do things on your own without having to worry about whether or not Meta is going to turn the fire hydrant on or not. But it is good ultimately, I think.
Yeah,
hopefully.
So.
Yeah, but he's all over the place. Yeah, he's
yeah, with that fucking hair of his. Yeah, wow.
Oh my god,
that's some hair.
Somebody who needs a fucking pliers. You know what I'm saying? You talk about a guy who needs a fucking pliers, pluck some out.
Do you know what you need? I think you need some Rhino Wet and just fucking...
Everybody needs Rhino.
Grind it off. Everybody needs Rhino Wet. So if you're doing any sort of hand sanding, let's face it, we all are. We all hate it. Make your life so much easier by using Rhino Wet for your hand sanding. Honestly, you will thank us for it, really. And I'm not just saying this. It really is a game changer. You can get that from TexasFarrierSupply.com, as well as anything else you could possibly need. Head on over to TexasFarrierSupply.com. They've got everything there. And if you go to checkout and put in Knife Talk 10, you will get 10% off your entire order, which includes your Indasa Rhino Wet. Go fill up your carts, get some Rhino Wet from TexasFarrierSupply.com.
I'm with you. Last week we posed the question to our listeners about how do you deal with belts glazing over. You know, belts glazing over, they're not as strong. We got a few of them, and one of the people who said something was Adrian Briel. Adrian Briel says, "Hey guys, love the show, love your mix of knowledge and dick jokes. That always make
what we specialize in.
That always make my day. From the previous show, the topic of belts clogging up, I've got a little trick that works for me. For low grit belts, I use a diamond dressing tool, the kind meant for bench grinder wheels, with the belt running on a smooth contact wheel. I carefully dress the top of the abrasive just enough to remove the clogged peaks, and it doesn't wear the belt out as much if I'm careful. I'd rather trade a tiny bit of life for that belt that performs better than that uselessly clogged. Cheers from South Africa." And then Corey Phillips says, a little bit of feedback on the glazed belt situation. "I learned from Blade Forums a couple years ago to use diamond dressing tools. They use on silicone carbide bench grinder wheels. They're cheap and work great. I bought one handle on eBay, and then I cut them to fit the handle. When the diamond wears out, I can get 4 for $7. I'm curious to hear about other tips from other listeners." So everyone's talking about the diamond dressing wheels.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always, because I used to do a lot of plastics, and they'd glaze over terribly over a belt. So I just, sorry, just have a, excuse me, just a second.
Hello. Hoc tour.
I would say there's a frog in my throat, but you can't say that in France.
That's a good one, dude.
I keep a tiny little scrap of steel, basically in the bottom of my even heat. So it's just being like heat treated a million times over every time I use it. It's bam, bam, bam. But whenever I want to, particularly if I'm using plastics on my belts, if ever I want to sort of, it's almost like a layer of film you just want to take off. It's got sharp right angles on it, so it's super hard. I just throw that into the belt on a work rest, so it hits it at perfectly 90 degrees and it just sprays everything off. I wouldn't use this on a new belt because it'll just spray all the abrasives off. But if you've got a belt that is sort of clogged up and all that kind of stuff, it sort of can work. You can get those that almost like a, it's like almost like a big eraser as well that you can use, like a huge one that you can jam in. But I've never really had much luck with them. But yeah, just something like, well, sharp, as you said, those diamond tools, whatever it be. Yeah,
I tried the whole having a piece of steel and just driving it in, and it doesn't do anything.
No, right. It has for me. But I said, particularly with plastics, if I'm getting plastics clogging up the.
So with stainless, it really kind of like. I want to get one of those dressing tools and kind of fool around with it because it's definitely something that fools around with. But here's a good one. This one comes from Trails Edge Forge. Trails Edge Forge. He says, here's.
Who?
Trails. Edge Forge. Here's a funny story about a customer using the product. I was making a wedding ring for a customer who was also a chef. He found out I made knives and explained that he had ground concavity into one of the edges of his favorite knives when sharpening and asked if I could fix it. So I flattened the edge, got a screaming sharp, and sent it back. And he replied, "It's still leaving the skin attached when I'm cutting veggies." So I replied, "How flat is your cutting board?" Sure enough, his wooden cutting board had a massive dip in it and was scared that it was my, and I was scared that my work was failing at first, but everything worked out. So that's a.
Never thought of that before. No. Yeah, people's boards having a dip in them. Your blade isn't going to contact. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the wood board thing is always, the boards are always a problem. I mean, you know, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
And people don't know what the fuck they're doing with their knives. I mean, it's just like.
Again, I'm still seeing videos of people with glass, you know, pastry rolling things, you know, glass things, cutting stuff on them. And it's just like, what the hell are you doing? Mad.
Well, you want to go back to questions or?
Shall we?
Yeah.
Shall we? Okay. Sheffield Forge. So it's not Sheffield. Sheffield, as in chef. C-H-E-F. It's clever. That way of doing it. Sheffield Forge. Do you guys have any experience butchering? With my newfound free time, I've been clearing some animals off the feed bill. And love using my own knives for it. Would you rather butcher all your own meat or be a vegetarian?
You know,
I think this one's for the Joe Rogan podcast, maybe.
what do you
I happily butcher my own meat if I was raising my meat. We, in fact,
how are you raising your meat?
if I was raising my own animals, I happily would, and I have done in the past. We used to keep pigs and sheep back when we were in Wales. I wouldn't do the butchering; we'd take them off to the abattoir and they'd come back neatly packaged. But I wouldn't have a problem with it. I really would. But it can't still be vegetarian. It's, I mean, that would take a lot for me, I think. It would take a lot.
What part?
I'd eat my own children.
Okay, you what?
Before becoming a vegetarian.
Oh my God. Talk about Joe Rogan.
Not quite, but no, I don't have an issue with it. And in fact, just over Christmas here, we keep chickens here now in France. And we sent a bunch of cockerels off to be turned into meat. Which we try to sort of keep from the kids because the kids, you know, see them as almost as pets and they're always playing around with the chickens and so on. But they gathered straight away as soon as the chickens come back, and yeah, they put the two and two together, which I don't think is so much of a bad thing. I've never actually done any butchering myself. You know, I can break down a chicken, that kind of stuff. But you know, regards to, you know, skinning an animal, that kind of thing, I never have. But I don't think I'd have a problem with it.
You have a, what about the, you ever plucked a feather off of, you know, ever done that, plucking a feather off a chicken?
Oh yes, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's funny. I
needle nose pliers. I find works the best.
I'm talking plucking your chicken. That's what Craig's sitting around. We were looking for those needle nose pliers. They're covered in pubes. Where the fuck are they?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Craig's
outside. He's plucking his pecker.
He's plucking his chicken. He's taking care of the cockerel. Poor cockerel. Doesn't know what's going on. Doesn't have a clue, the old cockerel.
This old defense, it looks like one of those, do you know one of those, like, furless cats that just looks like a ball bag?
Unbelievable.
Back to it.
You know,
so what about yourself, Jack? You've dabbled with vegetarianism on. Would you?
My father had a winery years ago. I grew up on the winery, and we had a real deer problem. And he had, like, people would shoot the deer, and he would have people. He was not a hunter, and he kind of didn't raise me to be a hunter. He didn't have that history, but he allowed hunters on the property, and he would just, you know, he wouldn't, like, tell them to bring him some. He would always, you know, there was out of, you know, out of some sort of politeness, people would bring all this, you know, wild game all the time. Now, I went on a hunting trip once, and I helped one of my dad's friends as a hunter shoot a deer, and I wasn't really, like, it didn't really do it for me. Now, I do believe, I feel as though as meat eaters, we've lost a sense of the gravity of life. To, you know, if we're going to eat meat, you should know where it comes from, and I think that you shouldn't
be
desensitized to the fact that life is taken for whatever you're eating. So, with that said, I'm very, very appreciative of the ethics of hunting, and I totally believe in that, and I try to be as you know, relatively conscious of what I'm doing, to the point where I'm not frivolous with the, if I eat meat, I'm not frivolous with the way I cook it, and I don't eat it a lot, and I would probably have a real problem. I know my wife would be like, just forget it. I remember going to a farm, their family farm that we used to go to, and to get the turkeys, and it was ethically, you know, nice farm and stuff like that. And I remember I went to pick up the turkey, and they opened up the door, and they were slaughtering a fucking lamb or goat. And I was just like, I don't need this in my life. I saw it. They opened the door, like, you know, and that was a lot for me. And I have done vegetarianism, and I liked it. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it made me a better cook for a while. But at the same time, I made a steak for my kid who really wanted one, and it was fucking delicious. So I appreciate the fact that, you know, I believe that we were meant to eat meat. If I had to raise my own animals without any history of it, like Fingal, we had Fingal on Christmas on Full Blast, and you know, his family, he's few generations of living with animals that are meant to be food, and you don't get too attached to them, and there's a whole thing, and obviously I'm glazing over, you know, the whole thing about it, but I don't have that history of like not giving it, you know, not, you know, I call one of them pigs some name, and the next thing you know, I don't know how I feel about we're gonna eat them tomorrow. So yeah. I mean, I think it's a complex situation. I don't take it lightly. I could be vegetarian again if I had to. I liked it. I frankly I liked it, but at the same time, I had a hamburger in the city. It was delicious, you know. And I'm not going to be a hypocrite enough to say it's not. So, complex question for complex answers. I like the idea of humanely raised. You know, I don't really want suffering and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I'd say, being here in France, the quality of meat is so much better than it was back in the UK.
Right.
The welfare standards are so much higher and that kind of thing. Yeah, and yeah, I mean, because, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, having animals for meat, that kind of thing. I'm sort of used to it, but I can see, you know, particularly maybe city kids who, you know, they've never been out maybe in the country so much, and they haven't seen animals sort of, you know, being bred for meat. I can see how they'd be so distanced from that whole thing, you know.
Well,
seeing a burger doesn't equate to a cow in a field to a lot of people. You know?
I will say that my wife grew up in Wisconsin on a farm, but none of the animals were meant for food. So they had goats and they had ducks and they had chickens and they had all these animals that they kind of like became pets. You know, it was a working farm, and they did, you know, they were using all the animal, they had sheep that was for wool and all this stuff. And I can see how she would feel differently. Like she doesn't really want to eat meat. Like she doesn't, I mean, she eats chicken and stuff like that, but like, that's about it. I can understand why people wouldn't want to, and I have no problem with that. I don't have a problem with either one of them. I have a bigger problem with people taking for granted that a life is being lost and they can't do a bad job cooking it. Like I hate to see the waste of an animal's life, or either bad meal or a lot of waste, or when stuff goes bad. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I got a bigger problem with that.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. Let me tell everybody about Dharma Steel. We've been working closely with them for a number of years now. We do the Chef Invitational with them and so on, where they invite great knife makers to make great, great knives with Dharma Steel. And they're always beautiful, beautiful things. So if you've got something special to make, whether it's a gift or somebody wants to buy something special from you, Dharma Steel is the stuff to use. It's a stainless Damascus, essentially. Beautiful, beautiful patterns, which they repeat perfectly each time. Go take a look. DharmaSteel.ab on their sorry, DharmaSteel.se online, and their DharmaSteel.ab on Instagram. You'll see the kind of stuff people are making with it. Beautiful. I mean, a lot of people use it for jewelry even, because it's so beautiful. Super easy to use. Yeah, go get yourself some DharmaSteel at DharmaSteel.se. Use Knife Talk at checkout, and you'll get 10% off your order.
And if you want to apply for the 2025 DharmaSteel Chef Knife Invitational, now's your chance. So if you thought, oh, I got to be invited, you can apply. So now it's all open in there. You can apply for the night for the 2025 Damus Steel Invitational. I think it was a great idea. And I don't know if you listened to last week's episode, but Carly said that we were talking about making Damus Steel grills or Damus Steel tooth for pear, and yes, that is being worked on.
Really?
Apparently they're working on a tooth for, but I don't know if they're going to knock one out to put the one in. I don't know what they're going to do, but get the guilty old pliers out. You know what I mean?
I think at the end of, the beginning of each chef invitational, I generally go on and have a bit of a chat with Pear. I'd love it if it's just at the end of the chat, he just turned and smiled and he had this glint.
He took his finger.
Of a Damus Steel, right, one of his front teeth.
And he just took this little pinky finger, pulled his like lip up, and then there's this like fucking Fafnir tooth sticking out there.
This gangster Fafnir. Yeah.
You know, he just grabbed the old pocket pliers and pulled that tooth right out and pulled jam that next one in. A pair, where would
the
you?
Fafnir fill-in.
Yeah, the Fafnir fill-in, that's it.
Brilliant.
Zach Mapes says, good afternoon, gentlemen. Really enjoyed this week's episode of Aging Gracefully with Jeff and Mareko. Quick question. Do you have any tips on actual stretches that you do? I'm in my mid-40s, and I don't find that stretching really helps. Thanks for everything, Zach. I'm in my mid-40s, and I don't find that stretching really helps?
Jeez.
What do you do for exercise, big guy?
Not much. I've got three very young kids who keep me moving. But I do find, particularly in these cold mornings, getting up out of bed is just like, oh, everything cracks and, oh, geez, it's hard work. I don't stretch, and I should. I really should. I should have some sort of morning routine. I know that. But I'd prefer just to feel guilty every time I don't do it.
I hate feeling guilty.
Live on
the hardest part about stretching or any of this stuff is persistence, because it takes a long time for you to see one time, two times isn't enough. Actually, my kid took me to a yoga class. I had a great time. I was amazed at how good I felt afterwards. I was the only guy there. It was all these old ladies.
Yeah, it's full of middle-aged women farting.
It was hilarious. Yeah. I was like, it was fucking, I'm in there wearing like a Knicks shirt, training shirt, and all these old bags doing their thing. And I was just like, that's fine. I can be the cockerel of this pen. You know, that's all fine by me. But the hardest part about aging gracefully and doing exercise is you just have to do it all the time. You can't just, you know, do one or two and hope that you see results. You just have to put it in your life. But I cannot tell you how much better I feel. I feel better now than I've felt in 10 years by a mile. Wow. And it's bald, but it's 5 years of working out every day.
Yeah.
You know? And then eating a little better and blah, blah, blah. That's what I would do.
Good for you. Yeah,
big deal.
Good for you. Yeah. Trails Edge Knives. He says, I usually make outdoor knives, but I just got commissioned to make a full kitchen set, including a bread knife. The plain edges will be no problem, but I've never made serrations. Another technique, but what size small contact wheel do you use for bread knife serrations?
This is a conversation you and I have been having for 7 years.
Yes, yes. It wasn't long when you got on the show that we started talking about serrations.
The first time when you had me on, episode 3... You said, really? We were talking about how you do a bread knife, and I hadn't done one, and I had a crazy way of doing it. It worked, but I don't do it now.
What was the? Yeah, you did, didn't you? What was that?
I drew the knife. I drew the.
You drilled holes, didn't
right?
You?
Yeah. I drew the whole knife, and then I actually took an eighth inch, and then I figured out some type of spacing, and then I drilled the holes. And then I just got them bigger and bigger and bigger, and then I cut the whole profile out, and then it ended up taking off half of, you know, it was just half of it. And it was a lot of work, but at the same time, it really wasn't very effective. But at the same time, I thought it was a good decision. Do you have any suggestions? Or?
I've got a very small contact wheel, but I don't know what it would be. You know, you buy those sets, you know, the small contact wheel sets, and it's basically the smallest one of them. I don't know. So the way I do it is I use a hand rest, a tool rest rather. I have everything working horizontally, so I flip my grinder, so everything's running horizontally. I mark out very carefully along the blade. So basically, I'll grind the blade down, so almost like it's a carving right. knife, basically. So it's virtually there. Mark out with a pen your spaces, so sort of maybe, depending on what size your contact wheel is. My spaces are generally about 8 mil, maybe a bit smaller, 6 to 8 mil, I think they are, between each. You draw those lines along, you know, the cutting edge. Generally, you're going to want to pick which side that you want your serrations on. I like my serrations to be on the right side, simply because most people will be cutting with their right, so you get the straight edge going into, for example, if it's bread, instead of, you know, so you get a nice clean edge as opposed to the tear edge showing. And then it's just a case of, just methodically just zipping each one in, and it literally is just the lightest of touches, just to zip them in, zip, zip, zip. And you get into a sort of rhythm. So basically, if you can imagine, you put one zip in, then you need to move along that sort of 6 to 8 mil, 6 to 8 mil, 6 to 8 mil. You just keep going until you get to the end. And you just want to try and make them as uniform as possible. The first ones that I made, I was taking off way too much, and it was giving me like really big teeth. You could cut a tree down with these things, you know? You just want to take it quite easy. And I think it may even help having slightly bigger radiuses than you'd think, because then you can have less of that sort of sawtooth and more of a gentler sort of curve. Because remember, you've got that cutting edge there anyway. So it's not really teeth that you're making. It's just cutting sort of these scallops into a cutting edge.
I agree. I learned more from fabrication on how to make a serration than I did. All my every single method I've used to make serrations, I've kind of looked towards knife for fabrication, like making a railing. When you're making a railing with very set pickets, you have to figure out the spacing. You have to figure out the spacing of the pickets, and then you also have to take into account the thickness of the picket. So when you're drilling the holes in your channel for your pickets, you have to make marks to figure out where it's going to lie and stuff like that. So spacing is really your important. Not only is the spacing important, but the size of the contact wheel is important, and then how they both interact. Because if you could do very tight spacing and then a big contact wheel, and what will happen is you'll have a very shallow scallop, or you can have a little bit bigger spacing with the same contact wheel and you'll have a less shallow scallop. So you got to try different things. One thing I will say, I did it on my Instagram stories and it was like, you know, a lot of people were doing it, is I make marks on the outside. Like I figure out my spacing and I make marks on the outside. So if you're holding the knife up where the blade is, you know, parallel to you, you want to see the marks of where you're supposed to go on the side that you look at, because then you can have an idea of where you need to go. You got to play with spacing and you got to play with your contact wheels, because I'll tell you this, not all scallops or not all serrations are equal. I used to make a very fine, a very tight spacing and then a tight contact wheel. And then I sent this knife to a professional, a barbecue guy. I was like, I wanted a serrated knife. So I sent him the barbecue knife with the scallops that I was using for bread. And he says, it's tearing the meat up. You got to change it. What you can do, I would highly suggest you just, you know, take a look at, use this as some sort of guidelines, is get a serrated knife out of your kitchen and then measure the distances of the peaks. If you measure the distance of the peaks, and you can get a kind of a feeling for where you're supposed to be, and then you could bring the fucking bread knife in your shop and say, hey, I can do this with this contact wheel, and these are the spacings. For some reason, and this is, and no offense to this guy, I love you, I'm sending you this peace and love, a lot of you knife makers don't know how to fucking cook, because if you went to what you have in your own kitchen, you would be able to answer these questions yourself. All these serrated knife guys, the easiest thing is go in your kitchen and see what you got and then take some measurements. It's like, I mean, it's there. It's in your fucking cabinet. Yeah. See what they're doing. It's not like, you know, Pythagorean theorem. I mean, it's like, see what you got and measure it and then figure out if you can replicate it. And your first time doing it should be on like a piece of mild steel. But definitely get it. That's the last thing you should do is do the serrations. Like, I will grind their knife. I grind the knives to zero, basically the same as if you were to put a regular edge on it. Then we'll hand sand it. Then I'll mark it. Then we'll do the thing, because the last thing you want to do is the serrations. And then once you do the serrations, you're going to have some wire edge on the outside. I come back. I lay it down on that. And then I'll use some Scotch-Brite to take off any kind of deburring, and you're going to get a little bit of discoloration from the heat from the contact wheel. Don't worry about that. This is, you know, once again, once you put those serrations in, it's not like a razor blade edge anymore. Anyway, it's like you're never gonna crack a fucking tooth on your serrated knife.
Yeah. And just be super careful, because obviously you got super, it's super thin there. You basically, Jeff said, you grind down to zero basically. So when you're grinding in, just be super, super careful there. You're not, you know, you're just pushing things in hard and running things too hard.
Don't worry so much either. You know, it's just fuck around with some. The other thing is the knife makers do is they'll do something for the first time with the best, you know, with the best intentions. You know, get some fucking shitty steel from from the Home Depot. Get a couple of pieces of scrap metal and practice on that. Don't do it for the first time on your finished knife. You know, practice.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Manny Fernandez has sent us a question. Manny Fernandez, 858 on Instagram. Manny. What would be your recommendation for a first pair of needle-nose pliers? for your first pair of all-round tongs. So you can only afford one pair of cheap production tongs, almost typed tongues, he said. Yes. Cheap production tongs. You can only afford one. What are you getting, all right, Jeff?
I'm going to ask you, if you were to pick something up and what kind of tongs would you be looking for based on what you'd use your tongs for?
Okay, depending on what I'm picking up, exactly. Let's say I'm picking something out of a kiln and I'm quenching it. Probably something with like a groove in the faces that, you know, so you've got a firm grip of what you're picking. I can't, I don't use tongs very often at all. In fact, that's the only time I would use tongs, because, you know, I don't forge. Getting sort of straight flat tongs, I can't really see that many purposes for them. I'd imagine you'd want a tong for a specific job.
Well, here's what I do know. I sent you a pair of tongs that for quenching.
You did, yes, after I was using vice grips.
And those tongs, the tongs I sent you, you cannot forge with those tongs. Because I know that for the way they pinch, they won't have a lot of surface area to hold on to what you're doing. When you're looking at the kind of tongs you need to buy, you need to figure out what am I picking up and holding and what am I doing. There's a million different types of tongs, but it's all based on the material that you're holding and what your intentions are. So I know you're not doing any forging. When I sent you those tongs, I pitched some easy pickup tongs, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people use pliers because they have, you know, when they close, they have a specific surface area. They're holding your stuff, you know. If you're forging, it's a tough question just because I've been spending so much time with Pat Quinn, and he makes tongs, and tongs are very important. You got to understand that cheap and being able to be efficient with what you're doing is two different things. Because you have to make sure when you fiddle around with tongs that don't fit right, or they're not great, or they're just okay, or you can get by with them, once you get the correct tongs and then for the correct purpose, you realize I've been playing too long. You've got to figure out exactly what you're doing, like to the point where, you know, having a lot of tongs is good because you're going to get better at what you're doing when you can hold the material correctly. So my suggestion would be getting a pair of, you know, there are some companies that sell like a universal pickup tongs or wolf jaw tongs. Wolf jaw tongs there's a company that makes these, I hate to say it, but they're called Billy tongs, and they're really like, you can hold handle material, you can go a lot. Pickup tongs are important because you really want to be able to pick stuff up and use it, but it just depends on what you're doing. That's the most important thing. And tongs aren't cheap, and tongs shouldn't be cheap, and you should get the right tongs for the product process that you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we call it a day? I'm just looking down the questions, and I think we've got an etching week next week. We've got a couple of etching questions. So, if you've got any specific etching questions, get them to us, and Marek will be with us
and
next
week.
And
send in your birthday shout-outs. I'm expecting a lot of, happy birthday to Lou Skunt and Hugh Janus and all them.
Lots of them, please. Yes. Right. Thank you very much for listening. As usual, we'll be with you again next week. Marek will be with us too, hopefully. Yeah. And send in those questions. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Bye for now.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.